Hello.
Are we there? We are. I think we're live. Yeah, we're a little bit slow. It's a little bit, yeah. How are you, Dave? Lovely to see you again.
And you?
How are,
we're not, how are you? We're not in the house this week.
No, we're not. No tricks.
Can't poke him. He's definitely back in Devon.
Yeah, my acting skills of saying, oh, yeah, what's the weather like up there, Dave?
Yeah.
Upstairs.
Yeah, you did really well, mate. You did really well. Proud of you.
Oh, what a trip, though, wasn't it? That was good. Lots of shooting shotguns. Great.
It was a great weekend. If anybody hasn't, have we put it on YouTube yet? Anybody who hasn't seen our video?
We've named it, instead of Finn and Firearms, which didn't tell people a lot who didn't know who Finn or Firearms were, we've basically started a new YouTube channel called Frontline Chat, all right? And I'm still not sure whether I'm going to call it Frontline Chats or Frontline Chat. What do you think, Dave? We'll discuss that later.
I'm no good with decisions like that.
Flick a coin, because I've called it on Twitter. Twitter, I just called it Frontline Chats and then realised it's not called Frontline Chats. It's called Frontline Chat. But we had to avoid things like the word police and cops, because we just got to be a little bit careful of that we're, you know, especially you in your position, Dave, that there's no sort of direct link and things like that. So people can look at that. It's not streaming live there today because YouTube has just told me they need 24 hours. So apologies for anyone who's seeing the recorded bit of this later on. It will go on there directly afterwards, but it'll be on, it is on Facebook, it's on Twitter, it's going to be on YouTube, it's going to be on our podcast, which you can get through iTunes, Spotify, and all that sort of thing. And
we really are so international tech geeks.
Oh, it'd be good to put something decent on there for once, though, wouldn't it, eh? Hey, let's see if our new guest can do that. But we won't get there yet. We won't. I'm just getting used to the fact that we have had some terrific guests, haven't we? We've been very spoiled.
And every week we say, how are we going to beat that? And then somehow we manage to.
Yeah. And it was great to come up and see you. And shotgun. I've never really shot shotguns. I clay pigeon shooting. And we were, with a video came out, made us look a little bit better than we were, even, didn't it?
Yeah, so. I do want to talk about this right now. Now, Harry was on the firearms unit for how long, Harry?
About a couple of days, I think it was, before I left. Yeah. No, 25 years or something. 23 years.
And in those 23, 25 years, how many rounds do you think you fired, Harry?
Oh, rounds in all, probably absolute tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. And I'm right in thinking that when you fired those rounds, you had to be flipping accurate. Otherwise, you'd have lost your ticket.
Yeah.
Well, let me just tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, that did not bear out for Harry last week.
Hang on. I'm going to bring forward my defence here. We were talking about going abroad and shooting some Glocks, weren't we? We need to do that. The Glock is my little teddy bear. No, shotguns, I've got to say, was a complete... We have shotguns for the animal destruction. It sounds horrible, but it's if... And I'll go over this very quickly because there's people who get upset. But road accidents, you've got deer, big deer, or you've got a dangerous animal, which luckily I never came across, but it's just injured deer that are way past repairing, so to speak. So it was to put them out of their misery. And so we would have shotguns for that. Every force does. But the only deer I did put down, I used a Glock in the end because it was just far more suitable. It wasn't a big deer. But those shotguns, we used to practice with a stationary target as it was an injured deer, so to speak. So it wasn't moving around or anything like that. So... No, I'm not used to my deer flying through the sky, right, and running along the ground. Because if it was running along the ground, quite frankly, Dave, I wouldn't be shooting at it, okay? Oh, that's all my defense here.
Whatever.
It was freaking difficult, wasn't it?
It was difficult. It was good fun, though. But what was brilliant was I can't remember who went first, but I remember thinking, oh, crikey, I'm not going to hit anything. And Harry's going to completely show me up. And it was great. Exactly. Within a few minutes, Harry showed me that I had absolutely nothing to worry about. And the rest of the day was absolutely...
What made you a little bit nervous initially? Didn't I hit the thing with my first shot with the 410?
Yeah, and you should have ended it there. You should have ended it. You should have put the gun down, walked back to the clubhouse, 100% shot rate, and gone home.
I was very wet. Luckily, I hadn't gone in. And again, in my defense, I hadn't gone in saying this should be easy because I had already heard that farms officers and specialist farms officers are notoriously a bit rubbish at clay pigeon shooting. The clay pigeon never gave up as well. I kept saying, stop where you are, put the gun down. And by that time, it's gone, you know. So great defense, Harry. I don't think it's coming across as a great defense, but I'm gonna go for that. Did Finn have his toast this morning?
He did,
Joy Trundle.
Finn gets his toast every morning. For anybody who didn't see, I posted a video, was it this morning? And he loves his toast. Absolutely. I mean, it's a highlight of his day is nicking my toast. And it's all dog friendly anyway. It's peanut butter on toast, dog friendly peanut butter. If I don't get on with it, he's very quick to tell me off. And that's exactly what he did. He had a right little strop on this morning because I didn't eat my toast quick enough. I left it on the side while I checked social media and a message from Harry, and he was like, "Well, this is just not on, Dad." But he's had a busy day today, so he's nice and chilled out and relaxed.
I mean, someone's just asked if he had ever had to have an out of control cow. Well, Devon and Cornwall, my colleagues and I, we had to deal with several large cows who were armed and dangerous. But one of the most unique one we had was an emu, right? An out of control emu. And it was exactly like Rod Hull's thing. It was just more dangerous than that. Honestly, this thing was so dangerous and angry. The farmer said, you need to dispatch it, get rid of it, because we'll never catch it. So one of the officers did have that on his record of an emu. So unfortunately he missed the emu and got Rod Hull and he fell off a roof. Is that too soon? That's too soon, isn't it?
I got away with it.
but that is true. That wasn't the whole joke. That was genuinely a genuine thing. And I'd like to say this shirt here, right, this is a Quicksilver shirt.
You went collared today. I like that. Well done.
I did. Because I've got to say, Ollie Taylor is a very good friend of mine, and he's a traffic sergeant. And most people on Twitter will know him. He's a really good mate of mine. And he, about 15 years ago, said, Harry, you're still wearing that shirt. This shirt is officially, I bought it when I was 18 years old. It is older. Probably not older than most of the people listening to this, in fairness. But it is. It is. Seriously. And it's as good as you. This has gone, literally, it's come back into fashion. That's it. Come back in fashion, good as new, and I've worn it all the time. So I just wanted to introduce the shirt, Quicksilver.
My curtains like that once back in the 70s.
So rude. This is surfing, hip surfing gear, mate. You know, you city slickers wouldn't know all about that.
We haven't got much news, but we'll quickly just run through a couple of bits and. First and foremost, our full and absolute support for Harper's Law. Anybody who doesn't know what Harper's Law is, give it a Google. Yes. PC Andrew Harper was sadly killed when he was dragged behind a car full of convicted criminals. And his widow is calling for a new law specifically for is it specifically for police or all emergency services if they killed in the line of action?
I'll have to look at that.
So you can sign the petition, Harper's Law, and obviously you can use the hashtag Harper's Law.
It's up to 427,000 when I looked about 15 minutes ago. So it is racing towards the 500,000. Let's get it over 500,000. You haven't signed it now. We really appreciate it. That's definitely the one we're following is Lizzie's, his wife. Andrew's wife, noticed there was an article recently with his dad, Phil, I think his name is Phil, did very sweet comments about how they're desperately trying to get through it. So it's just an awful time, because a lot of these things, they happen, there's a lot of fuss, and then and it all sort of goes a little bit quiet. But it's really important now, if we can. You, Dave, you are really, really experienced and in really keeping motivated and the general public into to getting these things done. And luckily, it seems like that is the case. And it's really great that the media have kept on onto it and assisted and really backed it up. And by the Police Federation as well, who are really pushing it as well.
So, yeah, well done. If again, with Finn's Law, and it'll be the same with Harper's Law, we used people's anger and frustration and we turned it into passion. And I have no doubt that Lizzie will be able to do the same with Harper's Law. So give that support. And then while we're at it, slightly different, but the Thin Blue Paw Foundation. We've got new patches arrived today. We're going to be sending them out today. If you head to the Thin Blue Paw, if you Google Thin Blue Paw Foundation, go to the website, grab yourself one of these. They've got Velcro on the back, but you can stitch them, and they're good for dog harnesses. Oh, have I vanished? Hello?
You will come. It's all right. It's for some reason, it's all very slow, but it will come back, I promise you.
You obviously can hear me. The money will go towards supporting retired police dogs who need help with, you know, operations or hydrotherapy or stuff like that. So they're good to go on harnesses, kit, tack vests, you know, anything like that. So get head to the website and grab yourselves one of those for the Thin Blue Paw Foundation. That's it. Unless anybody else can think of anything else, I can't think of nothing. So.
Yes. Okay. Lovely.
About. Someone's talked about sewing kits. So that kind of leads
right,
in.
Right. Okay. What we have.
Are you there? Good,
mate. Go ahead.
No. I'm waiting for you to talk. Go. Who
yes,
have we got?
Yes, I am. Have you got me again? Yes. Yeah, okay, I will talk. Unfortunately, we're having a bit of technical problem, but we're getting there. Right, we're there again. Virgin, if you're watching this, can you call me and make sure we have a really steady stream? I was meant to have the super-duper fastest Wi-Fi in the world, and it was working great this morning. It's just decided to mess us up. So anyway, we have a brilliant guest today, because you know how we always ask those questions about the media, mainstream media. And I think it's really important to actually distinguish between mainstream media, local media, and also those that have written an article slagging off the police once, sent it to the Daily Mail, who actually get it used, and they now then call themselves a journalist. And we're going to learn a little bit more about the differences between. We have Kit Bradshaw with us, who started off, he actually learned how to do it, because he's got, you know, embarrassed, got a master's degree in broadcast journalism, as a proper degree. And he's been there since then. He's been a freelance broadcast journalist, a press office for British Transport Police. He was a special in British Transport Police and Sussex Police around Brighton. So that's going to be a really, really good link between the two there, and see how he got on with both of those. He was a Sky producer and up until recently a Sky News radio broadcaster. And now we're going to find out what he's actually just about up to in starting on Monday as well, really. So welcome. Welcome. Eventually, hopefully, it will come, because it's really slow. We have Kit Bradshaw. I see his name. His name's there. And let's see. There he is.
Hopefully
brilliant.
You can
lovely.
See me, guys.
How are you, Kit? Can you hear us all right?
I can hear you loud and clear, guys.
Yes,
good to see
we
you.
Can.
Thanks for joining us,
yeah,
Kit. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've been very unsubtle with my backdrop. I don't know if you can tell. I've got an old police helmet over one shoulder.
Ah, yeah.
And I've got a journalism award over the other shoulder. So I'm being very unsubtle. I'm sorry about that.
Perfect.
That's brilliant.
That's the sort of things that we want to pull out of you today, you know, what the differences are and who's guilty of what and how we can all work better together. So tell us a little bit Tell us a little bit about yourself, Kit.
So, as Harry was saying, I actually, before I got into journalism, when I was doing my undergraduate degree down at Sussex Uni, I was studying politics as my undergrad. I signed up as a special for Sussex Police, and I was a special constable down there in Brighton for a couple of years. This is before I decided whether, you know, journalism was the route for me. And like a lot of jobs, journalism is quite hard to get into. So as Harry mentioned, I actually started doing press office work, firstly for the an NHS trust down in Brighton, Sussex Partnership, which is a mental health trust. So I did a bit of press office work there. Then I went on to the British Transport Police, and at that point decided to, I might as well combine my 9-to-5 life and my every other weekend life, and transferred as a special over to BTP. And there was a special at London Bridge with the team there at BTP for another couple of years. And at that point decided, after a few years working in the press office there, decided I want to do journalism full time. And as Harry mentioned, went back to uni, got a broadcast journalism qualification, master's. And I've been at Sky News pretty much ever since. So since 2016. And as Harry alluded to, left there yesterday and I'm due to start a new job on Monday as well.
Going back down south, back down to ITV Meridian, isn't it?
That's right, yeah, ITV Meridian.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Oh, go, Harry.
So are you going to be like on the sofa? Is that, you're on the sofa with interviewing people?
I'm going to be a reporter, so out and about for the local ITV News. I'll be mainly covering Kent, but Meridian is a bigger region. It covers Sussex, Hampshire, but I'll mainly be based in Kent, covering stories there, mainly out on the road, driving around to stories, going to interview people at home. I'm sure, Dave, you had this with all the media interest in Finn, you know, local regional journalists out and about who know their patch coming to interview you. So, and one thing actually that we learned during the pandemic is obviously all broadcast news has been watched massively, especially in the early days of coronavirus. But regional news particularly, BBC and ITV regional news bulletins, huge viewing figures. Some days during the early days of the coronavirus pandemic, that 6:30 BBC News slot was the most viewed programme of any of the day. And that's the regional, you know, the regional news. So it's hugely important to a lot of people. And I know there's lots of, you know, online social media is so important, but a lot of people still sit down with their cup of tea and their dinner.
That was vital. Harry and I are in a little room of some pretty influential policey social media types, and we got to the point where we were actually encouraging people to watch just the news, because hopefully you were getting properly sourced, fact-finded information, whereas, as you know, social media can just be full of absolute rubbish. Rubbish.
Really true, isn't it? Because social media has really advanced the fact, so that I think all news grounds realizing that, well, they actually are going to have to talk about the issues because it's going to come out anyway. But then the problem is, especially with sensitive issues, especially when people are getting hurt or when somebody's been injured badly, somebody tweets a bit of video footage of someone getting badly injured or even worse. And it's just so important. We kept saying, no, just stick to, and I've seen this in America, it's brilliant, and the Met are getting a lot better at it, I have to admit, is where they put it out early, but they give them enough, because, Kit, you must realise, you must think this, can you imagine, all you'd get is that very grey reply, yes, a male in his 30s today was injured somewhere in London, and that's it. Whereas now it's sort of thing, you can call the dogs off, so to speak. Sorry, Kit, but you're a very nice dog, no doubt. But it is, you can call the dogs off a bit. I learned this from the Boston chief there. If he said, okay, this happened, can't tell you we're off at the moment, but in half an hour, we'll be coming back and we'll be telling you more. And then that gave them half an hour of freedom to do the investigation, get what they need, get the accurate stuff. Because I think that's what we found is if chief cops are too early in giving information, then it's found not to be true. Now it sounds like they were lying instead of just the wrong information coming through. It is a tricky one. It's a load of balls to juggle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really difficult. And actually, America, for a long time, the US, it's a completely different landscape over there. So it's hard to sort of compare chalk with cheese. But they have a, and we used to chat about this in the BCP press office, they have a completely different way of doing things there. And I think there's a culture here, a sort of long ingrained thing in forces that you don't really, unless you really have to, you put a statement out and you don't really do much else. You don't really, press conferences are for sort of major incidents. In the US, it's not like that at all. Local police departments, they'll have reporters, they'll have press conferences out the front, any big incident. Mm. If there's a major sort of, if there's a stabbing, something like that, the local sort of senior officer will come and chat to reporters. It's just a much more kind of open relationship with the media. But I think that comes because out there, they've had sort of local TV news for decades. It's been sort of part of the culture there.
And it's because I suppose local TV, local news was a really still a big deal, especially, in here, whereas there were numerous of them in America. So, I mean, I remember being at many a scene of a fatal road traffic collision, and I'd have some police officers saying, "Oh, Sarge, there was a BBC turned up. We told them to go away," sort of thing. I said, "Well, why did you do that?" It seemed to be indoctrinated, ingrained in police officers from an early age, and I think it's getting better. And they'll have your job, they'll misquote you. And then again, that's the difference between local press, national press. And I know you're national press, so it's really good to get into that conversation later. But it is that fear of, well, what are they? Whereas me as an investigating officer thinks, and they got it. Spotlight got me my main witness, who was able to turn that investigation around completely. And it was only because the girlfriend of the guy who saw something said, "Oh, they're talking about that that collision you were talking about earlier. I think they need to speak to you," and it was just brilliant. I wouldn't have had that otherwise. So it's getting that generation of cops saying, "Don't speak to the press,"
I reckon with social media, I reckon the newer lot, if they're allowed to, will be allowed. I mean, I used to be a neighbourhood officer, so I had very local news. Who, if I wanted to get an appeal out, or I wanted to talk about speeding through such and such a village, or it's very good if you've got kids involved, the press would be there straight away, and it just allowed you to talk, to get your story out there. And obviously, I use the press, as you said already, Kit, for Finn's Law. Massively, and I was lucky because I had some very good top cover who trusted me and knew that I wasn't going to go on there and start effing and blinding and bringing support into disrepute. But there's still, there's still some of all rank. There's still officers that are very suspicious. Now they think I've got a relationship with the Mirror, which I haven't. But the Mirror have been fantastic, and if there's something new, then they will help to cover it. But yeah, I mean, just recently that. They were saying, "Oh, you have a relationship with the Mirror and it needs to be declared." I'm like, I don't. I don't have a relationship with any journalist. But, I've found them to be very supportive, and they haven't misquoted me, but we do see misquotes. But how do we get around that? How can we? Because you see it from all angles. You've been at all angles.
I think you're right, Dave. I think there's a lot of mistrust. I think... I mean, back in the day, as you may remember this, but I talked to local print journalists who say, we used to call the local police station, every night you call, you'd speak to the duty sergeant and you'd say, "What's been happening today?" And he'd say,
"I remember that."
Yeah. And he'd look through the book. First of all, you can't get hold of a police station if you tried now. Do you know what I mean? There's no phone numbers. And second of all, police press officers tell officers not to do that anymore. Everything goes through the press office. But we've had this sort of, as you alluded to, Harry, we've had this weird kind of, at the same time as forces have tried to rein in control centrally, and a lot of that comes from, I think, the Leveson inquiry and stuff where police and press relations have gone bad, we've had this democratisation of it with social media, with officers and members of the public tweeting about incidents. And so almost, although some forces would like to really tightly control messages, they can't that much because so many officers and members of the public are tweeting about incidents. And,
I remember being in Dawlish, and again, some officers would say, oh, it's just the press, tell them there's nothing. I went, no, there's a brilliant job we had yesterday. And I'm like really enthusiastically selling it and slightly embellishing it. And, you know, and of course that was great for them. And it suddenly, because I'm thinking a bit long-term, is that they ended up shutting Dawlish Nick in the end, so it didn't work. But it was in the expenses. But I think they've done the same with Twitter, is where they've tried to get more control of what's going out. So people have just gone underground. And yeah, people have said to me, oh, Harry, I'd love to, you know, I'd love to do an account. Do you think I should go anonymous or put their name out? And yeah, I said, well, unless you are very well supported, don't bother putting your name out, because yeah, they'll shut you down when one person out of 30,000 neutral or positive remarks, they'll ignore that and they'll look at the one negative, and that is creating work. And so they'll decide to regionalize, you know, yeah, we'll have now that little job in Dawlish doesn't get its way to the press office because it's not big enough to get its way to the press office. Whereas yeah, you phoning up Dawlish, I'll tell you about the little oik we picked up with his backside out the window trying to burgle the local burglary, the bakery, you know? So, yeah, you know, and we're missing all of that now. So social media takes yeah, on, but now it's more anonymous.
I think, and there's so many anonymous accounts, aren't there? You probably know more about that, Harry, but I think that's because some forces don't support officers to have their own presence, don't they?
No.
So, yeah.
Yeah, some say the public get confused because they don't know who to follow. And I say choice is a good thing. And it's really clear, I think, if it's the traffic department or yeah, if it's PCSO Smith from your local area, who I would follow. Yeah. And I would follow Dave the dog handler because he's a hero who collects all the bad guys. So, and I like dogs. And you know, so those are the guys. And I follow Harry because his force let him get away with a lot, and he was yeah, very fortunate.
but back to your point, Dave, about how we kind of make it better. I think, I mean, my advice to any officer would be just don't, you know, if you see a journalist, like you were saying, Harry, at a crash scene or something, don't treat them like the enemy, because yeah, I've obviously been in uniform. So I walk up to, and this works both ways, because some journalists are really skeptical of cops and they're like, oh, there's no point chatting to them because they'll just tell me to F off, yeah, do you know what I mean? But because I've yeah, worn a uniform, I'll go and chat yeah, to any cop who's, you know what I mean, who's out and about, and I'll chat to them about how things are. And it's just, you know, not being, don't treat them like the enemy and just chat to them and see who they are, see who they're from. They should be honest with you. You know, most journalists, this is the other thing. I think it's all about intentions, isn't it? I think most journalists go into journalism for good intentions. And I think a lot of them are similar. You know, journalism to me is similar to policing in the sense of it's, you don't go into it for the money. that's the first thing. And you go into it for some kind of sense of, you know, of public service and kind of, from the journalism side, it's telling stories and getting things out in the public and holding power to account. Mm-hmm. For policing, it's keeping people safe and it's locking up bad guys. You know what I mean? I think the things that drive people to those two careers are actually not that dissimilar.
Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely agree.
Somebody asked, I'm not going to put the name, the comments on the screen because it slows everything down. And I do apologize, but I think we're safe talking like this and it's not breaking up too much. But it also means that I can't play that very useful university kit video of him giving, just trialing your art out, really. And I say, apart from your weekend stubble, you haven't changed actually a bit. But somebody actually said, you know, what training do young cops have? They do go into, and there is some training and basic training in the police now, and they are a little bit more, much more open to it. And they do say, look, my force used to say, by all means talk, but make sure you know what you're talking about. Yeah. And again, really supportive. I think with the Met, it's a massive beast. And so they can't really control everyone. Whereas my force, there's still 3,000 coppers in it. But they're able to treat us a little bit more like adults, really. Whereas you get one person, renegade, who says something in the Met, it reflects the whole Met, it's international news and so on. So you can see why they're a little bit worried. But yeah, the training is there. But there was another question there about, you know, after this year where the police feel as though they've had a real press bashing. Kit, do you think that's put us back? Do you think particularly, because Sky sometimes get a little bit of a knock and then they get very much praised. Certain other ones don't. But, you know, how do you think things are at the moment, or will it all go good again?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a sense of a lot of distrust among officers towards the media, I think. That's what I pick up on social media anyway, and from, you know, some of my former friends and former colleagues who are still in the police. I think there's a lot of distrust and a lot of scepticism. Yeah. I think it's a really challenging landscape now, because a lot of the problems come out about, because everything's videoed now, isn't it? And everything's both on both sides. Everything's body-worn video from the police, and everyone's got a smartphone. So stuff is just out there so quickly. And whereas it would take probably weeks or days for issues to blow up, it's so much more immediate. I mean, I think one thing that I'm often really worried about is kind of the echo chamber of social media. Yeah, I don't know what you guys think, but I still follow a lot of police Twitter accounts from my old, you know, and on Facebook. I still like a lot of those things. And I just always have to remind myself that my timeline is what the algorithm wants me to. There's been a lot of talk about algorithms recently with A-levels and stuff, but, you know, it's what the algorithm thinks I want to think and what that. So it's always good to, and I try and follow other accounts for that reason, just to get other viewpoints and other views in. And I think one thing that seems to come up a lot, and I'd be interested in your guys' feeling about this, is say there's a story that an incident that, you know, is and you see people sharing it online and saying, oh, classic MSM anti-police narrative. Yes. You know, it might be some, and it might be an incident and it's been filmed by someone, or it's a bit of body-worn video. And
I might be guilty of that myself.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And that comes up a lot. It's kind of, I don't know, my I'd be interested in your guys' views on it, but I'll shut up.
I try not to name names, but the Daily Mail obviously have an incredible online news, social media news channel. They were one of the first to get it, and consequently their online, their social media news channel is absolutely enormous, one of the biggest in the world. And sometimes they can be a little bit guilty of clickbait. So there'll be a big story. There's got lots of points, and I'm talking about police stories here, obviously, and there'll be lots of points, but they'll use the one negative anti-police bashing bit of the report that they're talking about to get the clickbait. When actually, when you read the whole article, it's fairly positive. Yes, we can all learn from this. Yes, we can all learn from that. And then a few years ago, we made a mistake by doing that, but it's that that becomes the headline, and that's ever so frustrating. So, you know, for me, have you ever covered a story as a journalist, directly or indirectly, where you feel the coverage has been slanted by colleagues just to get that attention grabbing clickbait?
I think there's a lot of pressure nowadays on clicks, on eyeballs, and this is all media to a degree, because everyone's online now. So whether you're a traditional print publication or a broadcaster that also has a website, you know, people want clicks. But I think the slight differences, broadcasters are governed by Ofcom, and even though the websites aren't covered by Ofcom, most broadcasters are of the view that all our journalism should be of the same standard. So the due impartiality that they'd apply to TV news, which is in the law, Ofcom, you have to do it. Most broadcast websites will apply that to their websites. Mm-hmm. So a BBC News article, a Sky News article, will be of different standard. Do you see what I mean? Because they will be governing it like a TV news piece. And on TV news, you have to be duly impartial. You have to be balanced. Otherwise, someone could complain to Ofcom and you could get fined, basically. But the Mail, although they'd say they have to, you know, duly impart the news, they might argue that, they can have an opinion. They can be, if they want to be anti-police, they can be anti-police. True. If they want to be pro-police, they can be, do you see what I mean? So there's that difference. I've never felt an anti-police from the different media I've worked in. I've never felt colleagues have kind of put pressure to be anti-police, or sometimes there's been a kind of, you know, is there a stronger headline that could get people in? And then often, actually, if you read the copy of the story, this is often where things goes wrong on social media, because people share stuff and they haven't actually read the article.
But this is the headline. But then,
just like you were saying, Harry, you embellish stuff on the phone.
But
the
headline that, might be embellishing. Oh, hey, don't use that against me. See, typical journalist, say one thing, that's it now. I'm headline. Hey, dishonest.
You've hit the nail on the head there, Kit, because, you know, people are, I always say lazy, but we live in a fast-paced world. So if all you ever do is read the headlines and then move on and share that headline because it's grabbing, but actually if you'd have bothered to read the story, you'll realise that there's much more to it. And actually that one tiny bit of the article or the story is nothing, and the rest of it is actually positive. There was a story by the BBC, I can't remember what it was, just a few days ago. But when you read the whole article, it was completely different to the headline they decided to use. It was frustrating, but that's the nature of the beast, I guess. Kit's frozen.
I think Kit has frozen. Do you know why I went out? I just went out. Can you hear us, Kit? All right. But I went out because I suddenly realised my son may be on his game, which is probably, it extracts more electricity out of the national grid and Wi-Fi system than you could possibly get. And so I've asked him nicely if he could turn that off.
Kit, I think we can hear you. We just can't see you. Can you talk, Kit?
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
We're just stuck on
this. I've just been bumped off my... I've just been bumped off my Wi-Fi, so that's what I'm trying to get back to.
Okay. Well, it's all right. I tell you what, you've actually frozen to quite a good photograph. It's a really good...
You know full well, Harry, if that had happened to me, it would have been like that.
Well, it would have. Yeah. That is, you've just...
It's like a poster boy shot of Kit.
It is. See, that's training. That's what a degree gives you, you see.
Exactly.
Because you know, never.
And you
never
exactly
stop.
The point to pause, didn't I?
No, yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I think talking about echo chambers, it's absolutely right. And that's why, up until recently, there was someone recently who kept doing it. Wasn't a troll, but it was a constant dig. And then they would send me links about their thing. And I was like, you know, and it was constantly just trying to get me, show me up a little bit. And I was determined not to block her, because if you do, that's better, Kit. Hello. I was determined not to block her, because it is actually really healthy to have someone say every now and then, no, you're a knob. You're being a knob. And, you know, and it is actually, and it, so you can go away and go, well, am I being a knob? You know, because otherwise you do get everyone saying, you're amazing. Oh, you're amazing. And that is the problem. I think the problem I found is it's a lot. Yes, it's the headline thing, and I think they know that sometimes for that click, and not everyone reads that whole article where it then says it completely right. But people don't read the whole article. And the other thing is what they don't say. So whatever they say is absolutely correct. It's technically correct. But by not saying something else, it gives a really inaccurate overall view. That's the problem that I find. And even with the BBC, more than anything now, it's getting guests on to say, oh yes, well, do you know, the police did this to me and it was terrible, and there's no one there next to them to say, well, when was that, did that happen, are you sure that happened? Do you know what I mean? That's the frustrating thing I think general public or cops are feeling.
I think one point I sometimes say to people when they say, oh, can you hear me now, by the way?
Yes. Yeah, hear me? That's better.
Oh, great. One thing that I sometimes say to people when they say, oh, the media is very anti-police, is that You know, the job of the media is to hold powerful institutions to accounts, whether that's government or police. And obviously the police are one of the most, have, you know, some of the biggest powers of any institution. And so I often say to people, oh, well, imagine saying, oh, that's a really anti-government narrative. So imagine for every article that was anti-government saying, oh, the media's got such an anti-government bias. I mean, you'd have to do it for like half the media's output. Do you know what I mean? Because that's the media's job, to hold government to account and to, you know, and it's often sharing and you know, publicising issues and holding institutions to account. So, but I do get the frustration of officers. I think it's just often important to not try and see, you know, one article about one incident as therefore an anti-media narrative when it's actually just reporting on one incident. And I know it, the struggle often is why is all the why aren't all the positive stories covered? And that sadly just goes back to sort of simple news principles, that the bar for a positive story being newsworthy is so much higher.
Yeah.
And the bar for a negative story or a horrible crime, or, and that is frustrating. But it's tough, isn't it? It's tough because, I think a lot of, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of people take it really personally as well. Yeah. A lot of officers take it really personally.
Yeah. I think because the next day it turns personal, because I mean, and I know Dave does because we talk about it a lot. And every day I get private messages from people saying, oh, just thank you so much for just giving one side, because they're not able to. And they say, do you know what? We're just so demotivated by the whole lot. I'm being cold racist every day and this, that and the other. And I wanted to do good. And they're really looking for elsewhere. And when they go home and they turn on the TV and the news is giving, let's say, it's a very negative attitude, whether for whatever reasons they are, because of the negative, because someone wants to say they've been stopped or whatever. And it's just bringing them down. I suppose they've got no way at all of saying, well, actually, it's not quite like that, because that's a good news story that doesn't reach that bar, I guess. You know, that's the problem. Because it's not interesting to the majority, is it? Somebody did say here, Kit, having worked in Sussex, didn't you feel the local paper has an interesting way of reporting? I'll leave that for you to whether you decide or not.
Kit, can you hear us? He's frozen again. He's frozen again.
I think it's great that
just slightly broken, mate. Yeah, he is broken. Just see if we can check his thing again. Dave, you're all right. You moving?
I am, yes. I might go for a ball of pose.
No, I know. I'm just going to stick him on the spot, see if he'd answer. And he's saying, yeah, it was a terrible paper. Or it was... there you go.
He's off to find his internet box again.
Yeah, we can see you, Kit, just in case you're going to the loo, okay?
Can you hear me any better now?
That's good. That's good. I can tell is that colour you just walked through, you didn't choose, did you?
No, we've actually recently moved house. So don't blame us for any of the paper, please. Just saying, I think it's great that there is still a strong local paper there, because a lot of places don't have
good local papers anymore. Regional.
So or regional, or you know what I mean. And actually, I think, you know this from policing, but when people don't feel a sort of attachment to their local area, that's often when problems, you know what I mean, when problems start. I don't remember that. I think there can be, you know, a lot of stories in a place like Brighton that there's quite high turnover of stories. There's a lot of interest from the local paper there in covering stories. I don't remember in lots of. Have you heard, Harry? Were you alluding to lots of unhappiness
somebody threw a comment up here and said, haven't they got an interest? They're obviously. Oh, there's a comment. See, this is just backfiring. It's firing stuff up now. So they're having a discussion amongst themselves here. And whatever I'm tapping has got a delay. No, somebody put a question on there. So they're obviously local there and they find that they've got an interesting way of doing things. So that was all that was.
So we need... Go on, Kip.
I was just going to say, interestingly, about a couple of years ago, The Argus, which is the local paper in Brighton, ran a big story. It was almost like a campaign criticising Sussex Police for their press operation and saying, I think what had happened is there'd been a murder in Brighton or something a couple of days before, and it took the press office a few days to put a press release out about it. Yeah. And they were basically arguing, you know, things are happening in our local area and no one's, you know, we're not finding out about it. Yeah. So I think there was a bit of animosity between the local paper and the cops.
And I can understand
that. I don't know
if
it's improved.
I can understand that, because the criticism would be, especially on social media, so if I, and would be quite common, this would happen nationally, is so I go to a job which is quite juicy and I think, wow, that was good, you know, and I put a little tweet and a photograph which looks really, really great, and I go off on 3 days leave then, and then all the papers ring up the press office to say, what's that? And they haven't got a log number. The officer is now asleep because he finished night shift. And it's so frustrating. And of course, then it's a real big no-no unless it's life or death to actually ring the officer at home. And you see the press office getting a bit frustrated as well. But I think one of the major things now is, because you can't ring the police station itself, it's all 101, but that has really shut the door, hasn't it, for you press people to be able to get that flow of information. And then when you go out looking for it, you just get the door shut by a copper who thinks, well, no, don't trust the press. But it's. I found the local press were very, very good, because they wanted you to carry on and keep supplying information, and so they could put in the papers. So I knew that they wouldn't kill me off if I did something that was really controversial. Whereas I thought the National would obviously.
And this is where, like, this is where misinformation starts going around.
Yeah, I mean, I think my court comms hoped the Finn story would go away very quickly, because they could see how much work it would have created for them, and it did create a lot of work for them to begin with. I'm very lucky; my court comms were absolutely fantastic in the end. But there was definitely, you could definitely tell they were like, "Well, if we just ignore everybody, it'll go away." Which it didn't. And then we had social media, and people were asking about how Finn was, and you know, put a picture of Finn on social media, and then all of a sudden, all the newspapers wanted to know how he was, which I don't doubt created lots of phone calls at court comms. And for me, it was very frustrating those early days after the attack. But I just wanted a little bit more from court comms, whereas court comms were like, no. No, stop.
Yeah, because it does take staff, doesn't it? One thing I wanted to ask you, what a swipe reporter. You were a swipe reporter, Kit. Can you tell me what that is? Because that seems like it was a jack of all trades or something. Is that right? Have I said that right?
Yeah, no, it was actually the name of a show on Sky News, which was basically a tech show. So it was basically technology reporting on sort of new startup tech. So that's how I first got into TV reporting at Sky. And then more recently I've done TV news reporting there. But yeah, it was my training ground, basically, Harry.
So you had to find the story, produce it, and put it out, basically, everything. No
yeah,
pressure.
Find the story, go down, interview the people, go back to the office, put it together, edit it. And then it would go out on the weekly tech show. So yeah, but it was great fun though, and a great way to kind of learn the trade.
And so, did you, once you'd done that, once you were fully fledged journalist, and you were in the press office or whatever? No, you were special. Did you find that it was contradiction, or was it helpful, really?
Yeah. So I actually I'd done a bit of journalism stuff while I was a special, but when I got the full time job at Sky, I decided to resign basically as a special, which was a really tough decision. But for BTP, it wasn't a reserved occupation, but it was one of the occupations where you had to write to the chief and basically set out your business case for wanting to continue. Yeah. And I basically decided that everyone's has a personal decision, don't they? But for me, it was too much of a conflict of interest. I was thinking of scenarios where I might be out on reporting for something. It might be a protest or a riot, and I'm there as a journalist reporting on it. But if I saw something happen, everyone with a warrant card's got a duty to sort of help, haven't
and
they?
And vice versa, so you could.
I decided that it was too much of a... Others disagree with me. I've spoken to other people who think it, you know, it's possible to do it and juggle really both things, but I decided to step back at that point.
Yeah. Are there any specials who are journalists?
I heard you, Dave. Are there still specials who are journalists that you know of at the moment? Yeah, he's gone again. If you can hear, when you can just let us know, stick your hand up when you hear us again, Kit. But basically, I can see the conflict there, Dave, because especially if you're going to a job as, say, a police officer, and then you're telling a story about something that, because you were local and whatever, well, where did you get the information from? And it would be open to criticism. I can hear you now. Go on, Kit. I can hear you. Yeah, so I think you're with us. So, so that's the bit I could see. Oh, he's gone again. No, I say so. It's, okay. Right.
He did a tech piece, but he's no good at tech.
It's usually the case, isn't it? And what I should have done is run around the house and stop people using their electrical equipment on this side. And I would have been showing some embarrassing videos of him when he was much younger and things. But it is a tricky one, isn't it, mate?
Our next question to Kit was going to be, how do we rebuild that trust, or is it about right? Because actually what he's saying is, you know, the police should be journalists should be challenging the police and vice versa. So, you know, obviously it says that the BBC and that those sort of people are much more rounded.
I can hear you. I'm now sat on top of my Wi-Fi router, so
that's fine. Yeah, go on, Dave. Just summarise that again then, mate.
Yeah, so Kit, what I was going to say was, my next question was, how can we rebuild that trust? But actually, from some of your answers, I think you're saying that actually it might be about right as it is. Well, I mean, you know, you've seen it from all the different angles, corp comms, who get called crap comms, the mainstream media, and from policing. So is it about right? Are we where we should be? They challenge us, we try and supply them facts without getting involved in influencing court cases and stuff like that. Are we about where we need to be?
I personally think that forces could be a lot more open with the media. But you probably would say I would say that, wouldn't I? But I personally think, you know, they could give officers a lot more freedom. I think, you know, the forces that support officers with Twitter and with that kind of stuff, I think are great. And I think those forces that have made officers come off social media, that's a really backward step, because that is now the source for a lot of local stories, because you can, like you said, Aaron,
totally
you can't, you can't call up the paper, you can't. And, you know, so I think that's so crucial. So I think, I think that a lot of stuff could be improved. And I think a lot of journalists could be maybe just, you know, I always encourage journalists just to try and, you know, it's really hard nowadays, but just to try and find, you know, try and build relationships with officers and try and actually know officers in your local area. But it is difficult because you can't just walk into a police station and say, you know,
police are worried that their bosses are going to say, well, why are you having a relationship with the media? So there is definitely some.
I mean, and the other side, Pete Thomas has just said police services need to start showing body-worn footage. I think we've come to that point now. It's giving such a skewed and dangerous viewpoint. And you've got individual officers who are just family people who are being absolutely smothered across the internet. And they're not able to give a voice. And it's bad enough with when officers are being investigated, because I've spoken to many officers who for years and years, and it's that drip feed of that one-sided information, the family kicking off or the witnesses kicking off. Or, you know, obviously we've had Dawn Butler recently and she's just saying. And the officers can't say, hang on a minute. Well, I know it wasn't an individual specific thing for the officers on that occasion, but that was the problem. I just want to say as well, Tracy just said Penny Lancaster works within the police as well. So that's so there are people there, but I think it's got to be dealt with very carefully. Again, my force were brilliant. They stopped supervisors cutting officers off Twitter without going through corporate comms, first of all. And they had someone who was specifically social media in there, so that they knew whether it was a real reason to cut them off or whether it was just because the local inspector didn't believe in it. And that's a really powerful thing to protect officers so that their accounts are maintained, you know, and because otherwise one little complaint, they're gone. They won't last 2 minutes. And now I get officers saying, do you know what? I can't be bothered with this. They switch it off. You know, that's the problem at the moment. Where are you going to get your information?
The body worn thing's really interesting, Harry, because, you know, we were talking earlier about the difference with America. In the US, a lot of forces out there or police departments just release it almost straight away.
Yeah.
You know, something's happened, it's blown up, and they release it. Now, I think the difficulty here is some officers wouldn't be happy with that. So you'd have to have to get something, they might have to sign something at the start, basically saying any body worn could be released to the media straight away.
But I mean, legally, you'd think everything was owned and run by the force itself. So ultimately, they would have the over jurisdiction, maybe.
Yeah.
I think it would just be a force thing. They realized that actually, if they thought the officer certainly didn't want it put on, because they could be looking at, I mean, I've seen officers involved in stuff and they were waiting to go to Royal Protection, surveillance, that side of things. Now their face is all over the place.
Yeah.
So, and it could be embarrassing for, you know, Royal Protection if their face is there. Oh, look, there's the officer, you know. And when I was working Royal Protection, that was something I was really sort of concerned about, and was surprised that I wasn't pulled off from that, but wasn't luckily. But it is tricky, but I think we need to catch up now.
I saw Harry and I have talked about this already. A police chief, I think it was the Brevard County Sheriff, stood outside a known crack den, if you like, having an interview with all the local TV crew, saying,
"Yeah, I saw that. Brilliant.
We're coming for you. We're going to do everything we can to make your life a misery, because you're making everybody else's life a misery. If you're coming out of that house, we are going to stop you. If you're going to that house, we are going to stop you."
Can you imagine that?
Or we shut you down. I don't think we're ready for that quite in the UK, but I do think we have got some catching up to do.
Completely agree, because I think it can be so beneficial, you know, things like that, just open, like you say, willingness of local officers to get the media in for things like that, and just not having that fear of the media, because you know, a lot of police press officers, it's interesting what you were saying, Dave, about the Finn, you know, when the whole situation with Finn, because a lot of police press officers, it's a lot of work to get the media in often. Yeah. If you want to facilitate and meet the media, say, coming along to the, you know, and shadowing the traffic team out on a, you know, a traffic operation, it's a lot of work. Yeah. And often they want to send a press officer down, you know, and it's a lot of people hours. Yeah. But actually, if they can make it work, that's how you get the positive stories out. Yeah. And often it does require corp comms teams to staff it or to empower officers to do it. But it that's how you get more positive stories out there, is by forces being more open.
We need to do something, because, I mean, they're having a little discussion between, there's a police officer saying, look, it's the one job you don't admit you're doing anymore, especially if you're in London. And somebody's saying, well, you know, that's just terrible. That just shows what we're wrong at the moment. And I think we need to have another voice. It's certainly not like in America, that hasn't solved the problem. It's not going to solve the problem. So, you know, somebody said, you know, in America, you have press offices. Do we hear? Yes, we do. But it's getting all the information to the press office, because when a police officer is knackered, shattered, done the arrest, done the fire, they want to get there late home. The last thing they want to do is another email to the press office, say, oh, you might want to know about this. And then, you know, they are difficult to find. I mean, I would go on full firearms jobs where we literally batten gun somebody. And because it was at night in a residential street and no one really saw it, no one knew about it. You know, that would have been absolutely on the news front line. And that was all the time that would happen. That was regularly.
The situation that Harry was in, obviously, his chiefs trusted him and his corporate communications trusted him. Ask for forgiveness, not for permission. And I know I moaned about my court conduct at the beginning, but they were absolutely fantastic in the end, in that rather than me create them work, they trusted me to get on with it. They knew I wasn't going to.
Yes! Is
that the middle ground we need? I don't know.
You build trust. Yeah. Corporate comms, cop, media, you know.
Yeah.
If Kit double-crossed me once or something, I'd never use him again. Do you know what I mean? And then if Kit is actually, he did a really good article, and frequently there's Carl Eve down in Plymouth, and he's had to not criticise me, he's reflected the criticism. And I've private messaged him afterwards saying, fair report, mate, thank you, you know, which I think he was probably a bit surprised about.
Yeah, I think... one thing that is that, you know, in this country, we're very much, and it's a great thing, you know, police are part of the community and communities, you know, the police and that kind of idea of it not being a militaristic police and it not being, you know, this other body. And I think the more we can create, and often that comes through positive local stories about officers doing stuff in their communities. And the sad thing is that with a lot of papers closing down, you know, that a lot of local papers aren't there anymore, that we're losing those local stories. So Twitter's a great source of them if officers are tweeting about that good work. But unless anyone tells the media about these things.
Exactly, as I just outlined as well.
If people aren't telling them about the positive stuff, we can't report on it. So it's that catch 22, isn't it?
I think if you can build there, and I'm aware that go on.
No, I was going to say, if you can build that positive relationship throughout the year, when you have got that story where you might need a bit of help to get the message across, or you need to get some facts across quickly, if you've already got that relationship, then it just makes things much more easier.
Yeah, and I somebody was saying there that, you know, in America, they've had to shut down, I think, Live PDA and whatever, PDA Live or whatever it is. It's shut down all these fly-on-the-wall documentaries, which were really, really popular. But now, because it'll involve someone scrapping with somebody, that it's just drawing criticism. It's not the time now. So they're shutting more and more down. And I wonder if that will recover. I have a feeling.
Sometimes policing is ugly. It's not, you know, we don't go stuck up trees and you know, it's not all about helping old ladies across the road with their shopping. Some we have to deal with stuff so that other people hopefully don't have to. It is,
and yeah, and Kit will be aware, he will have been in the case where you're struggling with you know, a criminal at the end of the day, you know, and it's not like, right, well, I'll place his arm behind his back and then suddenly realize you're actually being carried by this man, you know, and you're and it gets, like you say, it gets ugly, doesn't it, mate? But I don't know. I'm a little bit concerned. The only thing, the reason I'm not concerned is with these things, I think, too much, is these things come in fashions. And there'll be something else. It was Brexit. It was COVID. It's policing, race, and that side of things. And I think there'll be something else which will be the big subject. And I think that policing will be left alone for a little while. It comes around a bit, and you could look back at the 20s, 30s, you know, 40s, 50s. It all comes around in circles. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the other thing is you're just talking about your knowledge of policing and incidents. And, you know, I remember there was can't remember what the video was, but there was a video of an arrest, and it was and we were looking at it in a newsroom, and some colleagues were saying, "Oh my God, this looks awful, what those officers are doing."
Yeah.
And I remember sort of thinking, "Oh, but that is that they are following. That is a training. That is the training. Mm. That is personal safety techniques yeah. they're using." But then I was also thinking, but actually, you know, a lot of people wouldn't know that. And if you put that in the report, then it's out there, and then people could rightly say, well, maybe we need to look at the, you know, then if some people are still not happy with it, then they can say, well, maybe we need to look at the training, but not those individual officers. So it's getting that knowledge out there.
Isn't still it? Remember your training kit. Yeah, Kit, can you remember the entangled wrist lock? I mean, that was supposed to bring down the maddest, baddest, meanest, and it didn't. Of course, it didn't. Like Harry said, you'd find yourself being lifted up and transported across the rock, landing on the bottom. Tried to use that one.
Gentlemen, we have come. I've 5 minutes over because of the Wi-Fi issues on my side, and then Kit had a couple of hiccups. But we're done. We're out of time. That's it. We're gone. So, Kit, thank you so much. And if your new bosses are happy to, it'd be lovely to sometime down the line, if we're still going and things, for you to join us again, just give us an update and all that, because it's really relevant, I think. And it'd be useful to have a chat with you again.
No, I'd love to. And I was just going to say, if any people in former or current officers in the southeast, in my new patch in Kent or wherever, my DMs are open. So if you ever want a coffee or a virtual
the new chief, I know it's slightly off your patch, but the new chief constable of Sussex, Jo Shiner, I'm pretty sure she will definitely be one worth getting in contact with. She's a lovely person, as you know, and pretty pro-press. So let's hope we can build some relationships for you down there.
Absolutely. That'd be fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Go out with the dog section down in Sussex.
I would love to.
And just so everyone knows, another shameless plug, that's on Audible now. It's on Audible. It'll be Amazon arching shortly, but it's on Audible. And
whatever it is, Kit, get your plugs in now. New Wi-Fi for Kit. Someone
really, Kit, you're a star. Have you got anything to flog at all, Kit?
I've got what am I going to sell, guys? I've got a tape measure. You know, I've got a chair.
Someone did say thanks for the tour of the house, Kit. So if you really want to put it on the market, a lot of people have seen it now.
Fantastic.
Okay, guys. Well, that was it. That's really kind of you. And it's been lovely. Thank you so much, indeed. We've kept the numbers. And we'll see you guys later. Thank you. Join us again next week. We don't know who's with us next week, if anyone, Dave, but we'll it's going to be fun no matter what. Thanks a lot, Kit. Good luck with the new job tomorrow.
Thank you.
Monday.
Take good care. Luck.